Hello, good evening, good morning, or even good night, depending on what time you're listening to this podcast. It is Reku's Weekend Detox. I know it's been a while, guys. I've missed you, and I know that you guys have missed me, too. I'm so sorry that it's been a little bit hectic. Life has been driving me a little up the wall, and I've been dealing with a lot of things. If you guys have been following me on social media, I kind of went through a stint having a big heart and helping out somebody. And expecting them to be able to help me back. But you know what? We are here. I could not end this month without doing an episode. There was just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Because this month, September, is Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, for those who were not aware. And a lot of other good things have happened. So don't get me wrong. Me not doing a podcast this month, for the days that I'm supposed to be doing podcasts, does not mean that I have not been cooking up stuff in the works. I actually have a sponsor now, and I will talk more about that sponsor towards the end of this episode. And honestly, they're not paying me to do this. This is just because I am supporting a friend who has supported me through my growth and my development over the last several years, and I feel like she deserves all the love and affection. So if you guys are not aware, September is the month of Suicide Awareness Prevention Month. For those who are not aware, suicide is a leading cause of death in the U.S. and society. Sometimes it is masked by drugs. Sometimes it is masked by overdose, because at the end of the day, that's just how people cope. I'm going to go ahead and start this episode off by being your friendly neighborhood, which, for those who are aware, I started off doing poetry when I was a kid, 13, 14 years old, and here I am today, actually going to have a book that's going to be released out. I don't have a timeline for you guys because I'm still waiting on editing. I'm going to go ahead and start off with a poem that I actually really resonates deep in me, and those who have actually been suicide survivors and those who have attempted suicide will also know exactly what I mean when I read this poem to you guys. This poem is called Tired, and I want you guys to listen really hard to this. I would be lying if I said I wasn't tired lately. Don't get me wrong, I've been sleeping like crazy. Drifting through life got me going through the grain. No one but myself to blame. Depression got me falling in love with anybody who will moan out my name, because I think that is the only way that I could stay sane. But in all, it's the same. When I'm alone, I feel myself going insane, lost in my thoughts, replaying the scenes that I wish I have lost, a past that made me a boss, but still with my flaws, I'm perfectly imperfect. Hard exterior, but I still love hard despite the fear in me, queen mind and a goddess mentality, but I am tired. My wings held down by those who take advantage of me. My wounds so damn it that it betrays me. Society is beating me down because of the skin and who I'm supposed to be. I can't even produce a carrier seed. Feeling less than a woman because one thing we are raised to believe that I should be able to breed. Character flaws. What would turn grown men into children when they can't deal with the luggage that I come with. Protecting those who abuse me. A flaw that still runs deep. Being a healer trying to heal the world, but nobody is here to help me. All I'm keep doing is getting drained at every loop and every corner, but who's going to save me when I'm about to go crazy? I'm tired. Let me sleep. No, I'm not weak. It's just that I'm so tired of being strong or being this narrative that you guys put on my shoulders. It's not like I'm truly needed. I'm wanting to close my eyes and not wake up because my fantasies is the only place that I'm not getting fucked by abusers or users because I'm a creature of habit. Please save me. I'm tired. Let me rest. Let me be in peace. Because at some point of time, I was just surviving out of spite. But then I started feeling like I had to stay around because people needed me. And the more and more that I realized that they were more draining than refilling me, I thought that only way for me to be happy was to make others happy, but at the end of the day, that's where those leeches and those demons started to play, because they realized that my light needed to be dimmed even in the darkest place, and I'm tired. If I didn't wake up tomorrow, I probably wouldn't cry. I probably wouldn't even shed a tear, and I'm tired. Let me rest. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is a poem that is going to be in my book, but I felt like it was a little bit more understanding for today's episode, because a lot of times people who face suicide, it's not about being selfish, it's because that is the only means of escape. That's the only way for them to stop everything that is piling up on them. It's not that they can't deal with everything going on, it's just a lot of stuff piling up on at one time. And a lot of people don't realize that actually the vast majority of people who commit suicide is men. Individual impact, this is statistic, and mind you, statistics change every single year, every quarter. As of right now, 79% of all people who die by suicide are males. Let me say that again, 79% of people who commit suicide are males. And these are the people that we look up to, that are our protectors. Those are the ones who are supposed to be there for us. Those are the ones who are tired of living with the burdens that go on in life. And it's even scarier because most of them are black males. Unfortunately, it is masked as something else. Sometimes it's masked as going into gang violence. Sometimes it's masked as commit like drug overdose, because sometimes committing drug overdose or having alcoholism is a form of trying to slowly kill yourself. And a lot of people, unalive yourself when it comes down to it. And I have to be a little bit here. I should have mentioned that there should have been a trigger warning, but I will put it in the caption somewhere. Don't worry about it, ladies and gentlemen. Although more women than men attempt to commit suicide, men are 4 times more likely to die by suicide because they tend to be a little bit more successful. Women tend to do it a little bit different than men do. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among people between the age of 10 and 14, which is very scary because those are children, those are the youth, and the third leading cause of death among people between the ages of 15 and 24 years old in the U.S. Now, mind you, it's because they never really had to deal with the hardships of life, and the thing is, as I've gotten older and older, I've realized that it is more liable because they don't understand the concept. Parents tend to shelter their children from a lot of things, but then when they go out and step outside of, let's say, their front door, their porch, now they're being hit with real life choices and real life situations that their parents have been trying to shelter them from. Sometimes trying to shelter your children is actually a backfire in a sense. And I get, as a parent, we want to protect our children. I don't have kids that are living at this point in time, but I can see how parents are when it comes down to it. I'm very empathetic and sympathetic as a person who wears their heart on their sleeves. Now, it is one of those things that it is a little scary because these are children, these are our youth, and it's sometimes some parents will even tell their kids, you know, if you really feel like you should die, you should, you know, be like a cat and die under a porch somewhere. We don't take suicide as serious as we should. We're so invested in looking at people and not realizing that suicide is not just the narrative that Hollywood puts on the stigma of somebody has to be sad, they have to be depressed. It's usually the ones who are smiling a lot, it's the ones who are hiding a lot, some people who are overspending. It's little things like that that makes you kind of look at, like, what is going on? Are you okay? Sometimes it's those people who look like they're on an emotional high and they're the life of the party. Those are the ones you really need to watch out. I always tell people to check on your strong friends because those are the ones who are usually suffering the most. Those are the ones that you need to be looking out for the most. It's a scary thing to realize that suicide is still the 12th leading cause of death overall in the U.S. And again, for that to end up being there, it's not as many people who are diagnosed that is dying from suicide. It's about 46%. And again, the statistics change every year. About 46% of people who die by suicide are diagnosed with mental health conditions. So it's not even show that it's even people who have mental health conditions that are unaliving themselves in these particular situations. These could be people who just are dealing with a stressful situation. It doesn't necessarily mean that this person is having bipolar depression or they have anxiety or anything else like that. Some people, it could be drug related. It could actually be, you know, situation related. And guess what? Those situations, those moments of having a bad relationship or breakup, those are situations where it is a lapse of mental health problems and stuff like that. It's something when you're not really dealing with something you're normally used to dealing with. These are not like, you know, the traditional clinical bipolar depression, something that you could put on your record indefinitely. These are just situational depressions or situational anxieties, things that can trigger these moments and these thoughts, and they don't really understand how this actually can look. So I actually did a little bit of more research this year than I did last year, and this is as of recently. Annually, the serious thoughts of suicide in the U.S. demographic, it's about 4.9% of them are all adults. 11.3% of them are young adults between the ages of 18 and 25. Most people tend to unalive themselves in that age frame because of the transition from being a child to becoming adult. These are those crucial years where you kind of want to be a little bit more invested in your children, a little bit more invested in the things. I mean, honestly, 25 is when I kind of went out of that phase of I'm living for other people and started living for myself. So I did go from that phase as a person who is a six-time suicide attempt survivor. I typically do look at when did I make that transition. At 25 is when I made that transition, when my brain was just like, you know what, you need to find something to live for. You need to find something to go for. You're married, you need to do this, because at the time I was still married. So I was trying to look into a little bit of things like that. So between the ages of about 14 to about 25, I was still in that mode where I was transitioning and I didn't know or live life and everything else like that. I was like, I'm not where I need to be. I'm seeing all these other people be successful. I had, you know, miscarriages. I was feeling like my marriage was failing. It was just a lot of things going that was just spiraling down. And then I also do have a mental health problem. So it's not a problem. It's just something I'm going to live with at this point of time. It's my extra baggage. And that is one of those things that kind of factors. And then on top of everything else, I am an African-American woman. I am mixed, but I relate more with African-American because of my skin tone. Now, don't get me wrong, I have Asian and you know, Native American inside of me. And then also Irish. I am a grade 8 American mutt, but I'm also part of the LGBTQ community in the transition of a lot of parents still look at their children with hateful eyes being part of that community. So I have to deal with that as well. So I've dealt with a lot of things and a lot of stigmas stacked against me in this world, in this community. And I did almost in a few different altercations since my 25th birthday have got to that point where I felt like I could actually hit that point, but I was like, you know what, these are thoughts, these are ideations, I'm not there, we're not going to do that, it's not worth it, this is a moment. That is when that mind trigger changed at 25. So 18 to 25 is those times that you really need to be kind of handling your children with kid gloves, especially if you care about your children. Those are those moments where you need to kind of help them through a little bit more and be there. You don't need to kind of impose on them, because if you impose, it's going to probably be a negative effect on them as well. Just tell them, if you ever need me, I'm here for you. So you have to kind of look at it that way. 18.8% is high school students. A lot of bullying, kids not knowing how to deal with bullies properly. A lot of people feel as though that everything's stacked against them is another time in another frame too. So we have to look out those particular moments as well. Also, here is where the really, really hard numbers hit me. That 45% is part of the LGBTQ youth community. That is those ones that are transitioning between the ages of 7 years old to the ages of 30. And yes, I ranged it out to 30 because even in your 30s, it is kind of hard, especially if you're part of the black community and LGBTQ. It is still harder for them to come out to their parents. It's harder for them to come out to their peers because of the fact of being, God forbid, you are a black male who says that I may not feel like I am a male. I might be a woman. I identify as a woman, especially with a lot of the older generations. They're still in that mindset that, you know, my son's, I don't like using the terminology because I am still part of the LGBTQ community and I don't care if I am or not. But the fact of it being, it's just like you use derogatory languages towards these people and they don't want to come out to you. They don't want to be there. They're afraid of coming out. And in some particular cases, some of them are unaliving themselves. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of them are very bold and they're out there and they're like, you know what, I'm here and you got to get used to it. But then there's a lot of them who are afraid to come out, or they get outed by family members or friends. And then now they have to deal with the consequences of somebody outing them when they wasn't ready to come out themselves. That enough, it can drag a lot on their psyche. And sometimes we have this high expectation, especially at that part of the LGBTQ community. Our parents are putting that pressure. Oh, you want to have kids. You want to do this. I want you to get married. I want you to do that. But they're like, I don't want to get married in a traditional sense. I may not even want kids. And they have this pressure put on them that they can't live up to, which brings them to a point of disappointment. I've also realized that most people who have, you know, depression and anxiety is part of the LGBTQ community, because even if it is still something very new, it's still something we have to deal with, and it's still something that there's a lot of hate against, especially now because a lot of states are trying to overturn, you know, the same-sex marriage, and a lot of states are still trying to overturn the interracial marriage as well. As a person who is, you know, Black, I have dated somebody outside my race, and I have dated males, and I have dated females, so I have had to deal with the stigmas between that. And even then, I'm gonna be completely honest with you guys, I've always been, you know, this is a safe space, and I am very transparent when it comes down to it. I have never fully came out to my dad. My dad knows, but I've never came up to him and like, hey, dad, your daughter is pansexual. She will date females and she will date, you know, guys. I'll date anybody who's also transitioning, you're transgender, none of that. My dad found out through social media, and he's never addressed it to me. He's never came up to me. But it's just more or less like when I still tell him, like, I'm seeing someone, then the first thing he says, and in a negative tone, it's just his tone. I don't think he does it intentionally, but he'll be like, is it a male or a female? And he'll say it like that. And it makes me like not want to tell him if I'm dating a female or not. And I'm like, does it matter? Your daughter's happy. Like, the fact that I'm even telling you I'm dating somebody should make you happy. Younger me, on the other hand, would be scared. A younger me would probably just lie and say it's a guy because I don't want to deal with the judgment, because the tone itself, it comes off very judgy, and it's making me scared to even want to bring this person home to my family or my household. But my mom, she's always known. My biological mom, she knew. I talked to her about it. She's the only parent, I think she's the only parent I came out to. And even then, like, my dad's mindset, he's born in that generation where, you know, the traditional sense where a man needs to be married to a woman and a woman needs to be married to a man. I remember growing up and a conversation overhearing my dad say to somebody when I was in my teens made me scared to come out to him, and I still haven't came out to him because that conversation resonated deep in my head. And even if I was to bring it up to him, he probably would not recall the conversation. But I overheard him and my stepmom talking about one of the coworkers of my mom's job realized their son coming out to them saying that I don't think that I was born, I don't identify as a boy. And the child was maybe, I think probably under the age of 14. I don't remember exactly how old they were. They weren't quite a teen. But I heard my dad say it, and I don't think he registered that I was listening, because usually back then I used to just be in the car and have my headphones in and not listen to whatever they were doing or whatever they were, like, I was that child. I stayed out of the way. But I overheard my dad say that that child is too young to know what the fuck they want. If it was me, I would beat the gay out of that child. And to that day, and again, guys, I don't want you guys coming for my parents. My dad has become a little bit more understanding since then. This is way, like, years ago. But the thing is, he said that, and when he said that, I was scared to come out to my dad. I was scared to let my dad know, because at that time, I was dating a female. I did have a boyfriend. But I did have a female who I was also dating at that time, too, that my ex was aware of at that time. And the thing is, I've dated a female multiple times since then, but I have never told my dad when I dated females. I've only told him when I've dated males, because at that point in time, I was really terrified of letting my dad know. And at this point in time, we have an understanding that he knows that I'm, you know, part of the LGBTQ community, but at the same time, I don't think he'll ever come to me and be like, oh, so how, what was the last time you dated a girl? We won't have those conversations. I don't think we'll ever will. But I, at that time, if I would have came out to him, I think it would have just been bad. And now we have a point where now he's a little bit more understanding, that he is aware that his daughter is LGBTQ. I'm the only one of the children who is part of the LGBTQ community. My sister is a supporter. My brother is a don't ask, don't tell type person. He strictly likes women, but he supports me no matter what I do. But like I said, at that point in my life, I just didn't never wanted to come out. And like I said, I still never physically came out to my dad. I was like, you know, I do. He's just like understands and he sees it. I've never hid it. I just never came to him and talked to him about it because of that conversation. Because I was afraid of the outcome it would be. And if he would have responded negatively, I would have, with everything else that was going on, I would have probably been worse. Now, I've realized that the highest rate of suicide that is recorded in the U.S., that is documented, are among Native Americans, and Alaskan Americans, by followed by non-Hispanic whites. The only reason why we cannot statistically register African Americans in the statistics is because most cases of African American unalivings is masked by drug overdose or gang-related violence. People will purposely put themselves in the middle of gang-related violence in order to unalive themselves because they have no fear. A lot of people think that suicide is just, oh, I'm going to do it myself. Sometimes putting yourself in dangerous situations can also, like, I can risk dying. I have no fear of death. If I die, I die, which is a lot of gang mentality because that's the only way to get out of poverty in some particular cases. But a lot of reasons why we cannot statistically put African Americans in this category on where they are in the demographics or in the statistics is because it's no clear-cut case. A lot of them, like I said, is drug overdose or abusing substance, or in that particular case, getting themselves in the middle of gang violence in order to escape. It's a form of escapism. Suicide is just looked at as that. It's not like, oh, I'm being selfish, this, that, and the other. They literally cannot make it past whatever they are. They're just not wanting to feel what they're wanting to feel. As of recently, lesbian, gays, and bisexual youths are nearly 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than straight youths. So when it comes down to the youth community, those who have identified as themselves as part of the LGBTQ community, that is where we're seeing a lot more fluctuation in the teen and the young adults, is because of how to be, it is still frowned upon to be part of the LGBTQ community. And like I said to my babies out there, if you need somebody to be your mother and to hug you, I'm that person. I will go to pride parades holding up a sign talking about, if you're looking for a mom, I could be your mom. It's okay. I will hold a big old sign saying, do you need a hug? Free hugs for everyone, because hugs are amazing, especially when you want to be hugged and somebody to recognize you. I would be the one to make you a pie on, you know, holidays and wish you a happy birthday and say happy Pride Month to you, because I know that sometimes we don't really know what you need. Another one that I realized it was a big one out there was the transgendered adults are nearly 9 times more likely to attempt suicide than the general population. So I also want to let you know on something on this one. I don't know if you guys remember, but a couple episodes back, if you are just now joining my podcast, welcome. But if you go back a couple episodes, there was an episode I talked about some transgender people who were getting hung or lynched, essentially, and the newspaper articles in the local areas was noting it as suicide. No, they were lynched. So you have to be a little bit careful when you are doing your research when it comes down to statistics, when it comes down to transgendered adults unaliving themselves. Some cases, if they're doing it in public areas like that, where it's clearly someone lynching them, you got to be a little bit careful when it comes down to that. But statistically, transgendered men and women are more likely to unalive themselves when it comes down to the adult population. And I'll tell you my theory. Again, this is my theory. The reason why there was a time where in order for you to get gender reassignment, you had to go through 10 years of therapy. And the reason why they did that is because psychologically, if you sat here and changed your gender and did gender reassignment, you were getting rid of certain hormones, and they would like you to go through therapy to make sure that this is what you really want to do. Because just like the same way of now, a lot of places are letting you try something out for 30 days, they don't want you to have buyer's remorse. A lot of people don't realize that that's the reason why they did it the way that they did. But now, because they don't have that restriction of, oh, you need to wait 10 years before gender reassignment, a lot of people, and it's not true for everyone, this is just still a small percentage, where some people will get gender reassignment and then not be happy, and still not happy. They think that changing their gender will make them happier. And I'm not saying anything against my transgendered, you know, part of the LGBTQ, because by all means, y'all are all beautiful. And sometimes I'll be looking at y'all like, baby, if God themselves could make my body look the way that they look, I'd be saying, yes, queen, yes. Because some of y'all would be killing it. But in some particular cases, some of you guys do go from that route and then also get buyer's remorse after being in changing your gender. Not all of you, but some of you. So that's where some of those come into play. Now, then there's the real off chance of you doing gender reassignment, but not letting your new partner know that you used to be a male or used to be a female. And it's just sometimes it does kind of have that psychological abuse because now that person's not aware of your past life and who you used to be. Now, mind you, I say this because I lost somebody not too long ago and they will be turning over in their grave. Their parents, when they got buried, I don't know if you guys remembered, I talked about my friend who was essentially lynched. They found her body in Mississippi on her way to Texas. Her parents buried her under her dead name, Brandon, not Brandy. To this day, she's always going to be Brandy to me. I don't care what anybody else says. But the reason she lived so unapologetically and why she also thought about unaliving herself on multiple occasions, I was her safe space to go to, was because her parents did not accept that their son, Brandon, was actually Brandy, which is the new identity as who she was always and who she will ever for always be for this point going forward, even in heaven. They just didn't appreciate who she was and who she was meant to be. So when they found her body, they still buried her as her dead name, which I found to be very disrespectful. And at this point, there's been a petition and we're going to get her her tombstone changed. So thank the gods on that. We had enough people sign on it and their tombstone is going to be changed. So there's that. But a lot of transgender people and stuff have to deal with that stigma because some parents don't accept that. We are starting to get a little bit better when it comes down to it, but there's more parents out there who are unaccepting than accepting. So a lot of transgender people have a lot of problem when it comes down to coming out to their parents or coming out to friends or even letting new partners know about their past lives, because now it's like you're trying to erase who you were before you were here. And a lot of people are very prideful on who they were before, and a lot of people are like, you know, if it wasn't for this side of me, I wouldn't be who I am today, and they discovered this is who I really meant to be. And by all means, live your truth, and that's the way I look at it. Now, also, the only time that I really see suicide actually being rooted to the Black community, unfortunately, and I hate to even put this statistic out there, but one of the highest causes of death for the Black community in jail is suicide. It comes up as suicide for us, but it is one of the leading causes of death for people in local jails, including prisons. It is that, and it's scary to actually look at it as, but it's one of those things where that's where it comes in for statistic for us. But like I said, you have to do a lot of research to find the other stuff, including the whole drug abuse and, you know, alcoholism, things of that nature. You have to do those diggings and the research. Now, when it comes down to it, I always tell people there's so many different warning signs. You have to know the warning signs of the risk of it. Some things that we have to look out for when it comes down to people and the people we care about, including children. The normal signs is the increase of alcohol and drug use, sometimes the very aggressive behaviors. And I'm not just saying aggressive behaviors as in like I want to fight everybody. Sometimes it could be aggressively happy. It could just be like those persons like, oh my God, let's go out, because they don't want to be lost in their own thoughts. They don't want to be by themselves in their own thoughts because they're fighting. It's a cry for help sometimes. Withdrawing from friends and community. Sometimes withdrawing from friends and community and constantly say I'm okay and smiling, those are the ones who are putting up a really good mask. So you have to go with that. Sometimes those people that you're always like, they're always there, they're the ones that always reach out to everyone, and then all of a sudden they just go silent. That's another sign you need to look out. Dramatic mood swings. Like I said, maybe they may go from being super happy, life of the party, to not wanting to talk to anybody, or not wanting to talk to everybody to be the life of the party. You have to look for the extremes in particular cases. Impulsive or reckless behaviors. Those are the people that, like, you know, want to start street racing. They've never been the type to street race. Now, all of a sudden, they want to go ahead and race this car that happened to be next to them at a red light. Those are the ones you kind of have to look out for. Sometimes you also have to look at people who start collecting or saving pills or buying weapons. A person, for example, a person who's like never thought about shooting a gun. All of a sudden, I want to go buy a gun tomorrow. Why do you want to go buy a gun? Oh, I mean, protection. And they'll make a really good excuse. They thought about this. They thought about long and hard. My friends know the reason why I would never buy a gun, but I've gotten over it. Like I said, 25 is when that change for me hit. Start giving away possessions. Like, if this person's naturally, like, I'll give the shirt off my back, that's, you know, you don't really look at those or bat an eye. But now if this person's talking about, hey, I'm giving away a computer, a $1,400 computer, and you're giving it away for free, like, wait, what's going on? That's when you need to look at it. Tying up loose ends, like organizing personal papers, paying off debts, all of a sudden they're like, you know what? They weren't concerned about it. They didn't have a set timeline to pay off things. They're like, you know, in 16 months, I'll pay it off. Now, all of a sudden, oh, I got to pay it by next week or next month, and I need to have this stuff paid off. That's when you start looking into those little things like that. Saying goodbyes to friends and family, seeming like they're hugging you a little bit too long, or they're sitting here and they want to spend more time with you, or they don't want to leave you just yet, but then they're saying goodbye. But those goodbyes don't sound like, I'll see you next time or I'll see you later. These goodbyes almost feel like indefinite. Like, you can tell the difference if you're very hyper aware of your friends and their motives and the people you really care about. You can kind of tell the difference of the goodbyes. Some things that people don't realize are factors in it when it comes down to suicide, a history of suicide. People don't realize that mental health, including suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideologies, anxiety, depression, those are actually a family risk, especially if you've had a history of it or a family member has had a history of it. It actually can be passed down. Mental health can be passed down from generation to generation, and people do not understand that. If you actually look back at a lot of serial killer documentaries, a lot of those factors come into play when you look at like people like Jeffrey Dahmer, you look at people like that. A lot of those mental health issues are passed down, but they tend to mutate and become something different in the child or their, you know, genetics. Substance abuse can also be related. It's not really, it can create mental highs and lows, which can cause suicidal thoughts, because if you're extremely low, if you're not getting those endorphins, or extremely high, you got too many, sometimes that can also help increase those factors. Intoxication, it actually indicates that 1 out of 5 people who die by suicide had alcohol in their systems at the time of death, because you are not cognate in order to stop yourself from giving into your dark thoughts or suicidal ideations. Access to firearms can also be a factor, especially if alcohol is involved. Serious or chronic mental illness, like I said, bipolar depression, manic episodes due to bipolar depression, anxiety, situational depression sometimes, and, you know, even seasonal depression can be a huge factor. I keep telling people, we have never lived this moment in life. This is the first time we've ever lived this moment. And the thing is, sometimes those moments could be too overwhelming for you and your brain, and your brain's just like, what's going on? What are we gonna do? Sometimes gender, more women than men attempt suicide, but men tend to be 4 times more likely to die. They are more successful at it. It's not a competition, but this is then a statistic. Women tend to go for it more. Men tend to be more successful at it. Sometimes a history of trauma, abuse, people who are, you know, there. I remember when I moved in with my father, and I tell the story all the time. When I moved in and I left the situation that I was in, I told my dad, if I go back to that situation, I will end up pregnant, in jail, on drugs, or even worse, dead. And I said this, I was 14 years old, turning 15. And this is what I said at that time. And I was like, ultimately, that was the decision. And that's what it was. I had trauma and abuse. I ended up dating someone who caused me a lot of trauma. And I've dated a few people that caused me a lot of trauma and abuse. Mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Not physically, but I had a lot of them that hit a lot of those other key ones. And the moment I told them, if they ever put their hands on me, you better hope I don't get up. recent tragedy or loss, sometimes feeling like you can't live without a certain person, grandmothers, great aunts, things of that nature. When my great aunt passed, and I miss her so much, I still live because of her a lot of the times, because there'd be moments I'm like, I can't believe I'm still here. But I realized that that's the case. When I had my miscarriages, those were the only times I think I got very close to just caving in and be like, I'm over it, because my children weren't here. And that was the one thing I knew I wanted. If you would have asked younger me,
growing up. And I told a friend of mine not too long ago that if you would have asked younger me what I wanted to do when I grew up, I said I wanted to have a child and have a white picket fence in a house. I never said I wanted to get married. I always said I wanted a kid. So when I lost my kids and I've had my miscarriages, those are the most heartbreaking things for me. So I literally lost my shit. I was just like, I can't. I don't think I can be here anymore. And as a woman, that's the thing that we are told that we're supposed to do growing up. If you have a very traditional household, they believe that you're supposed to reproduce, you know, procreate. You're supposed to do this. I grew up in a Roman Catholic household and a Baptist household. My mom is a little bit more traditional and very understanding, so she wasn't pushing those beliefs on me. But that is what I've been conditioned to believe, is as a woman, I'm supposed to be able to bear children. And as I've been told over the years that it's going to be very hard for me, that broke me as a person who grew up believing that's what we're supposed to do. So those are the times, those tragedies, those losses, what got me close to it a lot of those times. So a lot of the things that we can do as a person, if you're starting to know these behaviors or starting to see these factors starting to become fruition when it comes down to your friends and families and peers, you just try to approach them a little differently. Just let them know, like, hey, don't be afraid to ask them if they come up to you and say, I'm tired. Like, if somebody comes to you and say, I'm tired, that can also translate that I'm fighting for my sanity. I'm fighting for my will to stay here. And just talk openly and honestly. Don't be afraid to ask those questions. Like, if you have a plan to how you would do it, how would you do it? Like, ask them those questions, because they've already been thinking about it, so they know how they would go about it. And it's just like, you know, just try to remove things like, you know, pills, guns, knives, if you have to, if you need to sit with them for 48 hours, because sometimes they rather sit with somebody that they know and that they care about versus being in a psych ward or a hospital, because these are complete strangers that they don't know. Calmly ask simple and direct questions like, can I help you? How can I help you? How may I assist you from being there? May I call your psychiatrist if they have one? If they don't have one, there's a lot of different resources out there, like the suicide prevention hotline, that you can reach out to that will give them a psychiatrist to talk to in those time and needs where they're struggling. If there's multiple people around, have one person speak at a time. Don't bombard them, because they're already feeling like they're overwhelmed. Their brain is already bombarding them already. So have one person speak at a time, especially if you want to do an intervention. Essentially, you want to have each person talk at one time. You don't want them to over talk. You want them to have clear, concise, direct information, because sometimes they don't want to feel like they're being attacked. Like, if I'm in that situation, I don't want to feel like I'm being attacked, because then I'm gonna feel like this is justifiable for why I need to do what I need to do. So you don't want to attack that person. You want to just kind of be there and supportive and like have a clear, concise, like, hey, this is why we're here. We love you. We care about you. We don't want to see anything come of you. We love you. You don't want to argue. You want to express support and concern. Like I said, don't argue, don't threaten, don't raise your voice, because they already feel like they're being attacked. And if you're in that, in a situation where you're in a group environment, they're already feeling attacked. So you want to kind of like handle it with kid gloves, but be very direct. But again, be direct and watch your tone. Don't debate whether or not suicide is right or wrong, because ultimately when you start telling them this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, you're going to make that guilt that they already feel weigh down on them more. A lot of people who express suicide already feel guilty. They feel like, oh, well, maybe if I do this, then I'm going to be hurting a lot of people. And they feel guilty for having these thoughts. They feel guilty for feeling the way that they do. And sometimes they just want to feel, you know, they want to feel heard. And if you make them see like, oh my God, this is the wrong way, then they're going to feel even worse about it. They're already battling themselves as it is. They just need somebody to sit here and listen to them. If you're nervous, try not to fidget or pace, because if you come off that way, because now you're making them feel uncomfortable, again, that guilt factor is going to kick in. They're already going to feel bad about it, because now they're going to feel like a bother. They're going to feel like, oh, now I'm feeling a burden. It's going to be, so you have to feel confident in what you're saying to this person, but also understand and let them talk and have the floor. Express concern, and don't fidget. Don't sit here and stutter over your word. Don't be nervous. I know it's harder. It's easier said than done, but it's something that you have to do, and you have to be patient. And God forbid, another thing I tell people, do not leave people by themselves. Sit here and you try to let them know that you're there for them. And even if it's like, hey, let me stay with you tonight, you know, would that make you feel a little bit better? You give them the option, but then at the same time, you sway the option to kind of go in where, yes, I'm going to still be here. Like, whether you don't want me here or not, I'm still going to be here. But you kind of want to be there for them. Speak some words of affirmation into them. Check on your strong friends, because those are the ones who need it the most. I always tell people, like, at the end of the day, you want to kind of also try to do active listening. You don't want to make any negative statements and stuff like that when you're talking to them. Like, your life isn't that bad. I hate that statement. That's the biggest thing that my parents say to me, and it pisses me off to no offense, because to you it may not be bad, but what I'm dealing with and how I'm dealing with it, again, we are totally different people. So what may not be bad to you may be bad to me. So don't ever tell, and this is the biggest key statement I always tell people, is, oh, your life ain't that bad. And another thing is, not too long ago, I can honestly tell people where they're like, oh, they don't deserve you. Or like, if you're going through a breakup, you don't want to tell somebody, oh, they don't deserve you. You should be over it by now. You should stop crying it. No, however long it takes that person to get over it is their stuff. You can't tell them how to live their life or how to feel what they're feeling. Because the thing is, you have to understand that you have to have open and compassionate mindset when you're talking to people. You don't want to argue with them. And when you sit here and say that your life isn't that bad, you're opening the floor for argument, because this is their feelings and their feelings should be valid. They want to be validated for their feelings and how they're feeling. But when you come and say, oh, well, your life isn't that bad, or you need to get over it by now, they don't deserve you, you should be crying over them, you're telling them that their feelings are not valid. So don't do that. They're already battling with these feelings. You don't want to tell them that their feelings are invalid, and that will make them feel even worse about it. So if you're going to be there for a person who is having suicidal ideations or anything else like that, who are battling this day to day, because I could tell you I still battle with them day to day, but guess what? I have a support system in a support group that if I know that I'm feeling some way, I've learned a tactic of, tell me something good. If I can't get myself out of it myself, I will go to certain people and be like, hey, I need you to tell me something good. It doesn't have to be anything direct. Just tell me something good, because I can't find a positive thing to think about. And certain people in my life know what that means. And other people, like, they're kind of starting to figure it out. But it's certain people I go to because they know how to get me out of that headspace. I've started to journal a lot more, where I had to write all the good things out in a bad day. I learned that, you know, sometimes changing your mindset, that these things are not negative. They're just lessons. And I'm learning a new lesson every day. Did I learn the lesson? So it's about changing the mindset, but that is something that a person themselves have to go through and listen. You can't go to them and be like, well, you need to look at it this way. No, their feelings are valid. Let them have their feelings. They came to you, they were expressive enough and felt vulnerable enough to tell you what's going on in their head and tell them how they're feeling right now, and you're basically dismissing it. And that is the worst thing to do with somebody who is battling suicidal ideations or battling any kind of mental health issue. They want to be heard. That's the biggest thing. They want to be heard. They want their feelings to be validated. They feel vulnerable enough to come to you and tell you how they're feeling. So don't dismiss them. A lot of people don't realize that it is a very hard thing to deal with when it comes down to people in a crisis. And it's very hard. It's very, very hard. When it comes down to, like, the suicide and crisis hotline, there is a lot. Over 46,000 lives were lost in suicide in 2020 alone. It is a very scary thing that mental health and drug abuse and people not listening to people and people still being very prejudiced against, you know, the Black community or the non-white community and the LGBTQ community, to the point where we're battling these things. And like I said, it is definitely these babies out here in the world that they battle with it just as much as they do. There is a lot of things that you guys can do to actually help. If you don't feel like you want to do the research or put in the extra work to help out when it comes down to it, there is a National Alliance on Mental Health, Mental Illness, N is in November, A is in Alpha, M is in Mary, I.org. and that is, again, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. If you know somebody who is struggling in a crisis and needs help, you can call or text 988 and that will help you out. Or you can chat at 988lifeline.org and reach a 988 suicide and crisis lifeline supporter. That would definitely help you out. These are just those things that you can also help out. You can also text the National Alliance of Mental Illness at 741-741 to connect for free training crisis counselor on the crisis text line. They can definitely help you out. They can definitely give you different resources. You can go to NAMI.org to be able to get more information for those who definitely need it. If you're in the state of New York, there's different options as well. They have free different options in the state of New York, in your local state. Definitely look into it. There is a lot of people, because we want to help other people. There's training options for those who want to help people in different non-clinical ways. You can find different resources and everything else like that, especially when it comes down to children. We want to definitely help you. Like I said, the national line now for the suicide and crisis helpline is 741-741. If you know anybody who needs any help, if you need any kind of help at all, that is the number to text. Now, I thank you guys for tuning in for this long. If you have followed me before, you guys know how I am about mental health and mental health awareness. I'm a big, huge advocate. I want you guys to understand how much I really care about those in the Black community and Black of those who have mental health and those who are battling with the LGBTQ community, anybody who's just battling with suicidal ideation. September is a very hard month. We see you. You guys are valid. I understand you are. Some of you may be tired. I understand that some of you guys are just surviving out of spite, because I've been there. And I know some of you guys are just trying to survive because that is what you feel like you need to do. If you are battling, please do not hesitate to use that lifeline of 741-741 and reach out. And if you know somebody who is battling with suicidal thoughts or suicidal ideation, give them their research. You do research yourself. If you care about them, find different ways. There's free training out there to help coach somebody to how to have open communication with somebody who is battling with it, just so you can make this world a little bit brighter and be able to help somebody in need. Like I said, it is easier said than done. Now, I just want to guys let you guys know, I do have a sponsor now. I appreciate this friend for being a huge, huge friend of mine and watching me grow and being a good support to me. I have to give it to the Stone Dragon Crafts, and that is on Etsy. The Stone Dragon Crafts, traditional spelling, so Stone Dragon Crafts. She is also on IG. She is a very cool friend of mine. She does custom wire wrap jewelry, tarot card readings, and other witchful things for tinkering and spell work. She's really good at giving you some really good readings and pendulum readings. She is my sponsor for this episode and a few episodes going forward. Like I said, the Stone Dragon Craft. She is an amazing, amazing friend. She's also another person who creates a safe space for people to vent, as well as help people through their readings, as well as growth. She also will help guide you on the right if you're a new tarot card reader, or if you're just wanting to get a little bit more interest. She is a good person to go down. She doesn't do chart readings, but she can kind of read a little bit into charts if you need to, but she mainly does tarot card readings as well as pendulums. She also makes candles, as well as she always constantly has different spells and different cells coming on, especially during full moons, harvest moons, as well as, you know, different other times of the year for us witchy folks. So definitely check out the Stone Dragon Crafts whenever you guys get a chance. Again, thank you guys for tuning into this episode, and I just want to let you guys know I appreciate you guys for sticking it out, being very patient with me. And I will see you guys in another 2 weeks. I am going to be pre-recording episodes, so unfortunately it might not be a live episode for a while, but these will be pre-recorded episodes that I will release, and I'll have them scheduled to come out. But from your friendly neighborhood witch, you guys know the mottos at this point. It is okay to not be okay. Self-love is the best love, and self-care is the best care, and babies, I am here for you. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. Remember to detox and take care of yourself, because sometimes taking care of yourself is the best thing that you can do for other people. Just know that, you know, I see you, I love you, and I'm happy you're still here with us. Have a good one, guys.